Great.
You able to do it from here? Or?
I probably need both. I want to show something on the screen and then at the same time.
Let's try it. I don't entirely know how we're going to get it, but we'll have to give it a shot.
Yeah, let's do it. I guess the three of us.
Go. All right, so thanks everybody for coming back. We appreciate that. The theme for our next chunk of conversation is creating a domestic blogosphere. So the idea here is that there have been a number of countries where people have been very successful building local blogospheres, getting people within that country to start talking to each other, either in their own language or in a lingua franca like English. Probably the most famous of these examples is Hodor's example in Iran with Persian web bloggers, but we're going to have Isaac join us down here, and please, come on, and talk a little bit about the Chinese blogosphere, and Ori also tell us a bit about what's going on in Kenya. So we're going to ask Hodor to lead off, although, of course, the technology is always more complicated than anyone wants it to be, but we're going to ask each of these guys to talk for about 10 minutes about what's going on in their own blogospheres, and then we're going to take some questions, try to open up a discussion as we did in the first session. So please, sir, after you.
Thank you. I just want to talk a little bit about my experience, and actually it's the story of myself and the story of the Persian blogosphere as well, sort of. So very briefly, okay. The first thing that I guess is very important for a local blogosphere in a local language to start is some sort of spark or some sort of ignition or something like that which is needed. And it may sound like an obvious thing, but it's very important because otherwise the idea of such a new thing, a new concept, wouldn't catch on in that society. There must be something which is done by someone who is almost well known, at least has a sort of a audience basis, which I had actually at the time in Iran, because I had a journalistic background and I was writing about technology, and I was actually one of the first people who were writing about internet from the very beginning of 6-7 years ago in Persian, in local papers and magazines. And I've always tried to introduce this great potential, these great potentials of this this technology to Iranian people. And So I started with this sort of audience base that I had, and as soon as I started my weblog and then I sent the link to some of the popular Iranian portals, so I could attract a couple of hundred readers from the first weeks, and then it grew to later to, in a month or so, it grew to about 300, 400 visitors per day. So this is the most important thing. But after that, when I started my own weblog, I got so many emails, and I was really surprised because I didn't expect people to be so open about this concept, because you can never guess, even while they're speaking my language, but sometimes I can't predict that what is it that they're interested or they're gonna do. So they asked me how they could start their own weblog in Persian, and this is a very important point. I believe that if a blogosphere you want to create in a society, it has to be in their local language. You cannot start a blogosphere, or you cannot start a blogging movement or whatever for example, in a Chinese or even in Iraq with English language. It's a very, very key issue, and I really think that if it happens, we'll see almost the same thing in many, many other countries, especially in the Middle East. So I wrote a very simple step-to-step guide in Persian. In that guide, I included instruction on how to use copy and paste with your mouse. So it must be that simple and that basic. So people, for example, imagine there are some middle-aged Iranians who are familiar with working with computer, but they're not very tech-savvy, but they can write. And I wrote this instruction to attract those kind of people. And actually, there are a lot of readers and writers of these weblogs are middle-aged Iranian men and women. Especially men, I don't know why, but anyway, especially those who live outside Iran. They're very interested in that. Okay, then I started to, when I wrote that, after 1 week or so, or actually after a month, we had about 100 weblogs in Persian, which is very surprising. I was expecting to have this number after 1 year, but then it happened in just one month, and it was very surprising. So I started to provide other technical helps to this small community to make it grow and grow and grow. So I started to design some templates or to translate some of the blogger default templates, and then made a page and put those templates for archive, because you know blogger.com had two kinds of templates, one for the index page, one for the archives page. Now it's only one. So I made two templates, and then people were using them for a long time. So that's why there were so many similar weblogs in the beginning. And at the same time, I was trying to keep the list of all these bloggers on the left side of my blog, which is very important, because in the beginning, there must be some sort of centralized, not centralized, a central or some sort of place that everybody that is interested in reading others' blogs could access and read them from that. It's very important to have a list. And then I was encouraging them to put counters in their weblogs. I mean, there was no need for any encouragement, because when they saw it, when they see it sometimes, they learn it and they like it, and it created some sort of competition between all those bloggers to have a higher visitor, and they're showing off their visitors and etc. Then supporting these newbies, these newly made bloggers are very, very important. Some of them are really, really good, but they have very, very low number of visitors. And if you do not link to them, if you do not promote them or introduce them, they're going to die in a few days. Although they're very, very good, but it's very hard to keep your morale that so high and to be so self-confident and keep writing and writing, writing while you only have 5 or 10 or something readers per day. Providing technical help is very important as well, especially talking about a little bit complicated concepts like CSS and sort of those sort of things, RSS to introduce them, pings, trackbacks, and all those sort of things. And one of the greatest important, one of the most important things here is to, after a while, you have to get some celebrities, local celebrities to blog. If you could get only one famous writer or some sort of famous person, actor, anything, in any field, it's very important. It gives it, then you could, based on that, you'll get some many, many articles in newspapers and magazines, good publicity because of that, and then it creates its own wave of introduction to this phenomena. Keeping up with technical innovation is very important as well. So the pioneer bloggers, as we could say, they have to be very careful about these innovations and introduce them as well. And overall, I could say that, oh yeah, and the most important thing, the greatest step in this process is to encourage local programmers, local developers, or even not local developers, but encourage developers to make softwares that are fully localized. They're fully translated into those languages, whatever the language is. So people who do not know English, because all the applications are generally in English, even the menus are English and stuff like that. So if you could make an application with very fully localized content, it would really, really help. So that's why maybe that about 80% or even more percentage of Iranian weblogs are based in a local service called PersianBlog.com, which was made about a few months after this instruction was published, and it now carries a huge number of Iranian weblogs, and I guess without that, it wouldn't have happened like this. So in the discussion afterwards, there are many, many points that I think is important in this process that we're going to talk about.
So Hodor, I want to sort of fire off the first question to you, because one of the things that I'm very interested about is this idea that a huge number of these Persian blogs are being hosted within Iran.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you and I have talked a little bit about this. Tell us some of the reasons why that isn't necessarily always a good thing.
The only danger here, especially in the developing countries who have authoritarian regimes like Iran, is that if this local service provider is located in the country, then they have to abide in some way with their local rules, and it would make their job very difficult. They have to censor some of the weblogs, because otherwise the government would put up a very much pressure on them, and their whole business would be at risk. So it's one of the dangers. So recently I've started to think that this local service should not be based in the countries that have this situation. So for example, if Google.com, that owns Blogger now, could have increased the speed of their localization of this whole idea of blogosphere and Blogspot and Blogger, it would be really, really helpful to many, many people in Iran, in China, and in other places with some sort of similar regimes.
Okay, so we can put that on our to-do list of things that we're trying to accomplish later today.
If you know the Google guys, please
We know the Google guys. Yeah, that shouldn't be a problem. Other questions for Hodor? Other questions about what's gone on with this amazingly successful experiment in Iran? How has this happened? Lots of practical suggestions. Let's get some questions.
On the other side of it, Hodor, how would you characterize the social conditions that made that what you did really take off?
I think that it's almost the most important thing here, that a ground, a social ground must be present at the time too, for this whole new concept to take off. And I simply think that probably the fact that Iran is very interested in this sort of new medium is it talks about some of the social changes that's happened, or it's all been present in that country. And maybe if we do the same thing, if we proceed all these steps in, for example, in Turkey or even like in Iraq, maybe, I'm not sure, or in Saudi Arabia, we won't see such thing. So I guess there are some cultural explanations for that, that I haven't seen any academic study about that, but it's very important. It's very important, and there are some guesses actually. I've developed some sort of hypothesis about this, and I guess that this value change that's happened in Iranian society, especially among the young generation, is totally portrayed by the popularity of web blogs. So when we see that all these blogs are emerging, and there are so many of them, they're so interested in doing it, and it's almost a very hip thing in Iran. So young people and young boys, when they want to talk, when they date, one of the first things that they ask from each other is that, do you have a blog or not? It's a very, very hip thing. So, yeah. And I guess it shows that how self-expressive, as I said yesterday, how self-expressive and how tolerant the new generation has become.
So I'm going to just share my experience with kind of promoting blogging among Indians and Pakistanis, specifically on kind of a political. My blog has to do with politics, and it's a lot of discussion of the whole issue about India and Pakistan, countries which are close by but often don't know each other. And one of my observations has been in the last 3 years that the people who write on Dialogue Now almost never bother to have their own weblogs. They all love writing, and this is not the young, hip generation. These are older people, often with very deep emotional attachments to maybe they were born in Pakistan and they now live in India. And I think that blogging, as it is 3 years ago when I started, there were both some community web blogs and the individual blogs, and as it developed, it became more of an individualistic expression with, you know, comments being the community. But I really think that there are people out there, especially in some cultures, who are more comfortable in some kind of a shared social space. And so time and time again, I try to create an individual section in my weblog where people, if it's runs of Drupal, people could have their individual blogs. There really wasn't any interest. And these are like, you know, people who are 50, 55, who barely use the computer, but who are really passionate about talking. So I don't know if anybody else has any similar experience just to share about this.
So this is just a hugely useful observation, which is that weblogging is sort of only one paradigm that's emerged for how we can have these conversations. And it may actually be a paradigm that's been particularly useful in some countries, but not as useful in other countries. In America, where we're all as individualistic as we can possibly be and still manage to live in the same country, it sort of makes sense that everybody has their own brand. But that may not make sense for everybody. And in other cases, there may be social spaces that make a lot more sense.
Hodor, you said that social conditions are crucial. How would you define the conditions that are necessary for blogosphere to emerge?
I guess a sense of individuality is very, very important. We can summarize all those traits and characteristics and the concept of individualism. And, for example, if you won't see this, I mean, if the same situation was in Iran 20 years ago, for example, I mean, in terms of technology, I don't guess it would have taken off this way, because our parents' generation are not as individualistic as we are, and the younger people in Iran. And it's one, it, I think it explains it very well. The sense that they want to talk about themselves. And this, one of the things that I did was that in the beginning, I was calling my weblog, it was, it had another name. It was called self-centeredness or something like that. I was naming it because I wanted to prevent all those nasty things that people would comment about me or say about me. So, but then after I saw that there are so many other people who have the same self-centeredness, I changed it to my basic name, which is editor myself, and it sort of says that how I'm viewing this as a, as someone who has had a journalistic background.
So Chris was going to get in and then Darius.
Hoder, you mentioned that you're going to have presidential elections in March.
Yeah.
Can you tell us, like, what political impact do you foresee blogs will have, and are you planning anything? How are you planning to use this this capital and this immense popularity to perhaps influence the politics and the policy?
Mm-hmm. Very good question, because it deals with predictions.
Sorry,
it's always fun.
The question actually, I didn't hear it.
About the election, she asked. How? Because I talked about that, and probably this time in the upcoming elections, internet and this network of bloggers, Iranian bloggers, might have an effect on the elections. Yeah, I really think they might have an effect. But what I'm doing is encouraging the parties, especially the reformist party, which is called Jabhaye Mosharakat, or Iranian Participation Party or something, to encourage them to start a sort of website in the beginning, and then maybe some web blogs by their top officials that could attract people, because you could see a sort of very strong apathy among Iranian new generation and some sort of disillusionment that they're not interested in politics anymore as like we were at the time, because the new generation, even the younger people, I'm almost 30 years old, so I'm talking about the 20 years old Iranians now, they're not interested in politics. But I'm asking the parties to start this, and maybe we could get a very good answer as Howard Dean got. And I've been always talking about Howard Dean. I was trying to introduce this concept, this idea, and this whole event that happened in the States to encourage people to at least try it. And I guess it would you would get a good result by doing that.
So we're going to give a question to Darius. After that, we're going to go over to Ori to talk a little bit about her research and the kind of manuscript.
Well, I was going to ask about how political these blogs are, but you've sort of answered that question, that among the younger generation there's a new sense of apathy about formal politics. But how much self-censorship is there on the blogs, and how many of them are anonymous, the ones that deal with more sensitive issues?
Many of them have been always anonymous, but recently, because of the crackdown and because of some arrests that's happened, I mean, there's been some people who have been arrested because there was some sort of connected in some sort to some reformist websites that are very, very hated by the judiciary officials. I don't know why they're so sensitive about that specific party that I just talked about, Participation, Jabhaye Mosharakat. They're almost using any way to silence or to make them silent. They're arresting them, they're blocking their websites, they are using very smart tricks to make them unavailable to communicate with people, so they have shut down their newspapers several times. Whatever they start again, they shut it down in a few days, even in some cases. So although these Iranian weblogs are not political, usually and generally, but when something happens, like the election in the U.S., which was very important for Iranians because there was a possibility of a war, unfortunately, maybe, or some sort of military attack or any sort of violent attempt to change the regime. And it's been very important for them, so they've been talking about it and they've been writing about it very, very much in their web blogs. Although they're not political generally, but they sometimes become political because of the events of the day. Was it? Did you get your answer? Because I think I forgot.
Is that okay? So I want to switch over a little bit to Ori, who is in sort of a unique position here. She's both a very active member of the Kenyan blogosphere, as well as recently doing a good bit of research on why Kenyans are blogging, how Kenyans are blogging, how these groups are coming together, and is actually responsible for one of the briefing papers in the documents that you got yesterday and probably could find today if you want. So with no further ado, let me turn it over to my Harvard colleague.
I guess I'll start. In contrast to China and Iran, the Kenyan blogging community is very, 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 very small. I'm not really sure whether I should be sitting here, actually, given the numbers. And part of my challenge and why I'm here is to sort of answer the question, if I was to keep engaging in this project of trying to get more Kenyans blogging, especially Kenyans who are in Kenya, you know, and they asked me, well, why should I do it? Why should I blog? And part of my research was trying to see why other Kenyans are blogging and how to answer that question. If I go back, I'm set to go to Kenya in about 2 weeks. If I start having conversations with local people, can I answer? Can I give them sort of a pitch? This is why you should do it. This is why it's cool. And I'm still not sure I can do that. Part of the reason, I think, is that blogging is a very personal, it appeared to me after reading and talking with other people, it's a personal sort of project, and one that is, as she mentioned, it's like individual. And Kenyans, we're not, we sort of frown upon doing things that, you know, seem like individualistic or self-centered kinds of expression. And most forms of popular expression now are like radio, talk radio, hang out in the bar and talking, like in church or whatever. And so to convince people, there are quite a number of people who read my blog or who comment, but don't feel, send me emails. I'm like, you should start your blog. But they don't feel like either they have enough to say or that it's something, you know, they're shy or they're not comfortable with the, sort of the idea of getting online. There are quite a number of people who contribute to message boards or chat rooms where it's sort of more like a group kind of interaction. But to get them going as an individual is difficult. One of the things I'm trying to do now is encourage more group blogging. One of the most successful Kenyan blogs, Virtual Insanity, is actually a group blog. And I think that makes it easier for people to have converse. It's not like an individual thing. You're giving your individual opinion, but it's within the context of a shared community. And so I think for cultures that are less likely to get onto something that's me, maybe a group blog would be the way to go. For me, I think, again, the other challenge with Kenya is that if you look at Iran and China, we don't really have the problem of repression or the problem of we used to, but now pretty much anyone can express themselves. The media is very open. So, again, there's not that spark per se. And so I don't know what it would take to get more people online. Where I'm most optimistic is in terms of young people who are probably the most, you know, we've been disenfranchised for a long time, so young, like 18 to 30 age group, that we've not really had a chance to participate politically. Kenyan society tends to value more the opinions of older people, and I think as the Kenyan population, the younger population explodes, we feel that we don't have channels to express ourselves in the traditional media form, or that we're so different and diverse, and that's not reflected in the spaces that are currently available. And blogs offer that. If you look at all the Kenyan blogs that are online now, each one is so different. And everyone's writing about their own thing, but there's still an element of Kenyanness that comes across. And I think that's, if you're looking at bridging cultures, this is not really bridging like international, but within the Kenyan community itself, which I think is very important. The sense of like a national Kenyan persona. Why is it important? Because we've had the problem of tribalism before. We're still dealing with it. A lot of politics in Kenya is ethnic-based. And if you could find a forum that encourages you to look at someone or connect with someone, not because they're from your tribe or because they're from your class, but just because they're Kenyan and they're saying something that's relevant, that touches you in one way, or they're expressing something in a way that you wouldn't have thought of before, I think that's important. I think that's sort of the where I would ideally see the growth of the Kenyan blogging community. I guess the other problem is that most of the Kenyans who are blogging are in the diaspora. And there's, are we, you know, just talking to each other? Are we, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I think it's both. To the extent that it's a good thing for many of us, we're not used to being a diaspora. This is the first, maybe in the last 10 years, are we immigrants? You know, before we come here, get our education, and fly right back to Kenya. More and more, we're starting to settle here for various reasons, economic reasons, political reasons. But we would like to stay engaged. For me, it's helped me stay engaged in politics in Kenya. Because I blog, I'm always actively looking for things to report, both good and bad, about what's going on in Kenya. And so that's one way that we feel that we've left, but we've not really left. On the other hand, if someone who's in Kenya is trying to get online, they might see, well, there's not really a space for local Kenyans. Like, what would they write about? There's one guy who's doing something I think that's really interesting, talking about things that, because most of us who are here get our news from the Kenyan newspapers online, but he's talking about things that are not covered in the newspapers, and so that's another value that he brings to the table. Or he brings his spin from a Kenyan in Nairobi. For instance, he blogged about the fact that the parliament has only passed one bill in the last year, like one piece of legislation in one year, that didn't appear in any mainstream Kenyan newspaper, and you'd never have known that. So things like that, I think, are really important, and what's missing and what I'd like to see more of. Overall, I think I just have more questions than answers, really. I don't know whether this could be something big. I think there is potential. Like I said, mostly among young Kenyans who feel like they don't have a space. Women, a lot of my readers are Kenyan women. I've run into people. I was in D.C. this summer, and I was introduced. They're like, oh, Ori, I read your weblog. All young women, I think, who feel perhaps that my being online and speaking in what would typically be a man's sphere, Kenyan man's sort of sphere of operation, I'm opinionated, I say what's on my mind, is something that they look up to. And, the more I can open up, I'm not your typical, like, Kenyan, I think the more you can see that there are Kenyans out there who are doing things, who are engaged in a whole variety of activities, I think that's important, and that there are Kenyan young people who have valid opinions and Kenyan women who have valid opinions and can express themselves. If that gets more people online, I think that's a good thing. But I'll stop there. I'm talking too much.
So I'm going to do the same trick that I did last time, which is I'm stealing the first question. And this is what happens when you get control of the microphone. So the rest of you should just come down and seize them if you don't like it. So, Ori, one of the things that you touched on, which I think is really interesting and actually reflects a lot of my experience with blogging in Africa as well, is that the expatriate community is coming online a whole lot faster than the domestic community. And obviously, some of this is sort of
straight-up digital divide stuff, right? I mean, there's a lot of people who simply aren't online at the moment. But a lot of it, I think, is exposure. And a lot of the people that I know in the West African blogging community, they're getting exposed much in the same way that you got exposed, becoming part of sort of a blogging community at Harvard. How do we cross that gap? How do we go from that diaspora population, which is starting to get very, very interested in this and really have fascinating conversations, how do we get people, you know, in our home countries working on this stuff?
Actually, I was taking down all his notes. I think there does need to be a few alpha, what I call alpha bloggers. Prominent local personalities who maybe have a comment or doing op-eds in the local paper anyway and have a wide readership. That's key. I think getting someone big, and I've been trying to do this. There are a couple of columnists I've been trying to get online. That is key because people are already familiar with them. And they're more likely to do it. Something else that Dennis, who runs Virtual Insanity, is working on, and he's been pretty successful in getting more of his Kenyan friends in Kenya to blog, is using text messaging and incorporating that into, and this can come up in the tool session, because most people don't have access to the internet, but everyone has pretty much a mobile phone and uses text messaging very actively. And so make tools is another aspect of that. And I think just it still has to come down to why would this, you know, why should I do it? Why should I take time out of my day to do it? And that's the challenge. If you look at countries where blogging is huge, like the U.S., I think it's the reverse. People don't have time, perhaps, to interact face-to-face in ways that used to happen before. So blogging just becomes a quick way to catch up with the news. You know, you have your RSS feed there. Whereas in Kenya, you're more likely to, you know, hang out after work, spend time in the, you know, shooting a breeze, golfing, like doing all this, going to church. Like, they're much more traditional Robert Putnam type of, like, interaction that the space for blogging is not as important, I think.
So in other words, because Kenyans actually have lives, you know, blogs aren't nearly as for those of us who essentially don't. I think that's a pretty compelling argument, actually.
I think that's a good, you know, and if it takes off, it will be younger people. I mean, there are young people who are online in chat rooms, active, like message board, listservs, that sort of thing, commenting. Like one of the newspapers has a comment section now. And that's pretty active. Something they're doing in South Africa that I think would probably take off in Kenya is the Mail and Guardian has hosts its own like blogs, and the Guardian does this as well in the UK. And that way you could sort of, if you're online reading the newspaper anyway and you log in and update your blog, it sort of makes it makes it easier rather than doing it like your own individual blog on Blogger.
And that's another tie where the sort of traditional press comes into play on this. But just a good note for everybody here who's a tool builder, one of the interesting things particularly to think about in Africa is that there's often lots and lots and lots of other online discussion already taking place. GhanaWeb, which I referenced before, a lot of these different communities, and trying to figure out how you build the bridges between these existing communities and blogging is actually one of the interesting questions we're going to have to work through.
One thing I was going to say, interesting enough, whenever I post about blogging in Kenya or blogging at like the conference, I get the most number of hits. So there is interest, but I think there's sort of a gap there into taking people onto the next step. Most of the people I interviewed got inspired by someone else who was blogging. And I think the support is key. So, you know, playing cheerleader when someone new comes on and sending traffic their way is also important.
So Jonathan wants to get in here, and then we've got room for some more questions for Ori as well.
You said something that, again, reminded me of my wife, the not a typical Kenyan, not a typical Japanese. And, again, it reminded me of how she uses language, how she'll use English sometimes even with her colleagues to express an opinion. And I imagine your blog is in English as well. Okay. So I kind of want to go back to this issue, and I want to ask my international colleagues about this, because there's this assumption, I think, that English is used as a language to communicate with the West. And I'm thinking, and I want to understand if this is true, while localization is absolutely important to create a blogosphere within the country, if English is used in two other ways, one, as an international lingua franca, an international, and two, if because the language is extremely direct or used very often directly, if in fact it's used because you can say things that you wouldn't necessarily say in your own. I mean, I'm reminded again, I'm watching a television show with my wife about Hiroshima. They bring back the guys that actually dropped the bomb 40 years later, and they have these Japanese old women who take care of the Hiroshima monument, and they're sweeping, and the translator says to them, well, what do you think about these gentlemen, you know, in general, about these people that did this? And the translator is saying something, these platitudes to these American gentlemen, and my wife is laughing because they're speaking in Japanese. And I said to my wife, what are you laughing for? You know, obviously the content is really serious. She says, she's not translating what they're saying. What they're saying, the little old ladies are, oh, those guys probably all committed suicide. So I think, again, of the blog in Chinese versus in English being different, and there's a reason for that, because there are some things that you say in your own language and not necessarily in another. So to what extent can you address that? One is that disparity, and the second, that English may be used in a sense as a lingua franca, and two, because of its directness, to say things that you wouldn't say.
And this may be a question not just for Ori, but for everybody, especially.
Yes,
I know that
Holder
blogs very differently in Persian than he does in English. Sure. At least you seem to blog a lot more in Persian than you do in English. So.
Yeah, and differently, actually.
But let's let Ori go first on this one.
Yeah.
I think when I read the new blogs that have come on in Swahili, they are different. In that Swahili is a much more, it's elaborate and it's like almost poetic, you know. And so the things, their narratives tend to be just a lot more interesting and not really, there's a lot more context and it's deep. And so, yes, there's certain things that it would be much easier just to say it in English and come out and do that. But, you know, there is a value to that. I would like to see more people blogging in Swahili, even if their readership is small. It helps preserve the language. It helps grow the language. It helps us keep in touch. You know, I realize how much crappier my Swahili has become since I left Kenya when I read their blogs. But English does tend to be a lot more direct. Now, when I blog, when I address some things that are going on in Kenya politics in English, it tends to be Kenyan English. You know, like I'll use words that probably only other Kenyans would understand. Or we have, like, it's called Sheng, which is like Spanglish, sort of English Swahili, and I'll use that sometimes. So it's not, you know, it happens. And I think there are ways that even in English you could still capture the Kenyan-ness, and there's still certain things and anecdotes and stories that will come across that only a Kenyan would get what I was saying. So, you know.
Sure.
I don't know if I've answered your question. But.
Just goes up for it. How do you want to take crack at this one? Or Isaac?
Yeah, it's actually very important, the language thing, but as much as we've tried to encourage people to start to write in English, because we've always been saying that if you don't, I mean, I have this theory that if something isn't in English, it doesn't exist at all. It's almost true, and it's very sad, but it's true that many, many news that has been that's been happening in all around the world, but there is no English translation about them, or there is no English report about them. They do not exist at all for the world. So, but at the same time, I think there must be this level, this bottom level of local. Local content, and then English content would be on the top of it as a sort of backup, and when you're done with the lower level.
So, Isaac, do you want to jump in this question, or should we take a couple more questions for Ori, and then you sort of
I can show you a website. Maybe you cannot read it because it's in Chinese. However, it's about our conference.
and we'll get to see whether the Microsoft language package.
I just wanted to add that there is a paper about this language. There is an academic paper about the language.
And I can show you. So you can see. Last night. In Chinese, and you can see some other. Sneak preview of this conference. And there will be some, maybe it's now in China, it's midnight, so there are no comments to this post. I just found that I have a hard copy of the figure that Rebecca didn't Google out. Yeah, this figure shows that the English blogosphere, the bigger one, versus the Chinese blogosphere, the smaller one, all the information flow, most of the information flow is a one-way flow to Chinese blogosphere. You know, many Chinese bloggers, they understand English, so they find out, they can aggregate the feeds from English blogosphere and quote on the English blog, just like this. So the Chinese readers can get the information from the English blogosphere. There is no problem. However, the Chinese blogosphere's information seldom run into the English blogosphere. And I will show you, maybe I have time.
Yeah, you should go now. It's,
I can show you some figures of Chinese blogosphere size. Back to 2 years, there are only in year 2002, there are only thousands of bloggers in China. However, today there are already 600,000 bloggers in China. And hopefully, I think maybe in 5 years, the Chinese blogosphere may be the biggest one in the world. Yeah, you know, in China, the biggest natural resource is the population. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Can you repeat that number one more time? What are the numbers? Can you repeat those?
I'm sorry.
Can you repeat the numbers you just gave?
600,000. Yeah.
When it started in 2000.
Year 2000. At the beginning of year 2002, I can Google out only few bloggers in China. Maybe only no more than 10 bloggers in China. However, if you are a businessman, you can see many opportunities in this country because the number grows dramatically. Yeah. However, in China, you know, we all know that there are some obstacles to make free speech in this country. So in our recent research in simblog.org, what I co-founded 2 years ago to advocate blogging culture, we get 10,000 random blog posts in Chinese blogosphere recently and found that only 2% of the content are about society and politics topics. So, you know, others are about lifestyle, about internet and technology. So, you know, the blogosphere is not, the content is not even distributed in different topics in Chinese blogosphere. So, it's the current situation. And there are also some censorship in this blogosphere by government. In year 2003, the blogspot.com was blocked by China government, and tapad.com was blocked in year 2004, and then blogs.com, some guys including Rebecca's blog in blogs.com are also blocked now in China, so I cannot see your blog without proxy. Yeah. Also blogger.com, the web-based blogging tool, is partially blocked in China, so you can log on to the blogger.com website. However, you will meet many link failures, link breaks in this website, so you will feel very frustrated when you want to do blog in this blogosphere. Yeah.
And sometimes you can write, but you can't read your blog. You can't see your page, but you can log on and write.
Yeah. Yeah. I just want to use this slide to share my idea about blogging phenomenon and blogging culture.
Yeah, traditionally, the mass people, the mass people, they can only think in their mind, and they can now express their ideas, express their voice to the public. And then there are some traditional medias emerge, and there are readers. They can communicate with the communication tools, just like email, mobile phone, we are now using. And then the blogger appears. There are blogosphere that also emerge. And you can see there are two pyramids. One is population. You know, the mass population, most of them cannot express today, or some of them cannot even read. And then the reader's population may be smaller than the mass population. And then the blogger population. And then the traditional or the professional journalist population. The red paradigm shows the coverage of the different type of media. Yeah, and the traditional journalism, they can reach a bigger population with their institutional resource. You know, they are backed by the big tycoons and big groups, so they can reach the biggest population in coverage. However, the blogger, they are individual journalists, and the blogosphere is big. The coverage is also big. However, the coverage may be smaller than the institutional media. If we have a formula here that called impact equals the population, times coverage, that we can see that someday blogger times the blogosphere may have the bigger impact on the traditional institutional media. So the two pyramids can show that. Yeah. And in China, we have already building some blogging hosting business in China, not relying on the English-based blogging tools and hosting service. Now, there are already 4 to 10 bigger hosting sites in China. They have managed to deal with the relationship with the government, and they do some self-policing works to prevent from the ordering to be closed by the government. So it's the current situation in Chinese blogosphere. However, many of them cannot express in English. You know, English is not our first language. So we can only express in Chinese. And some guys like me can do some blogging things like in two languages. You know, I have 4 blogs in maintenance right now. One is English blog called isaacmao.com/meta, isaacmao.com/meta. This weblog can show some recent updates in Chinese blogosphere, that you can check the updates of this blogosphere. However, I do not have enough time to express in English all the time. So I think the content may be not adequate to express enough about Chinese blogosphere. So it's the current situation.
IRC back channel where people are sort of speculating about the numbers of the Chinese bloggers. And one question that has come up is how many of these 600,000 are actually Chinese in China, and how many are overseas, and how many of these are using Chinese blog hosting services and tools on Chinese ISPs hosted in China?
I think the majority of the 600,000 bloggers are all in Chinese mainland.
Oh, so the people are in China, blogging in China.
Yeah. So I pay most of the attention into Chinese blogosphere other than the English blogosphere. You know, the blogging tools plays important role to help people to express their voice freely in China, other than the traditional BBS or other web page technologies. So although the blogging tool, they have little voice to help people to express. Maybe I blogged it, and other people say, what's this? It's just a post on your lifestyle or maybe your daily life. I don't care. However, we can now see blogosphere in such a way. You cannot see the individual blogs. You should see the landscape of the whole blogosphere, the whole impact of this phenomenon. Yeah. So if there are some, I think if there are some important memes. Do you know meme? The term. Yeah. If there are some important meme, it will be spread all over the blogosphere. Just in one day or 2 days, the coverage is the most important thing. Now the single post, many people will quote and then generate their own ideas on the initial meme, initial idea of this post. So the coverage is the most important thing. That's what I said, the impact formula equals to the coverage times the blogging tools, the tools itself. So it's the most important thing, yeah.
If I could just follow up on that and then go to you.
Yeah.
Now, of course, there's in China, in order for the blog hosting companies to be able to function and continue to provide their services to Chinese mm-hmm. bloggers, there's a lot of self-censorship that has to go on.
Yeah.
And there's bloggers who are blogging about too political topics or two sensitive topics get asked, I understand, by the blog hosting mm-hmm. companies to stop blogging on those things and take certain posts down, or they're going to have their blog taken down because it will cause the whole service to
yep.
get shut down.
Yep.
So I guess what I'm wondering is, because of the self-censorship that goes on and then also the overt blocking and filtering that goes on in terms of what Chinese bloggers can access mm-hmm. easily from the outside world and not, how does that affect the conversation and the memes that are able to get out, you know, and the memes that do not happen, that might happen, you know, if it weren't for censorship and control? I mean, if you could just imagine what the conversation would be like
mm-hmm.
if people didn't have to worry about getting in trouble, how different do you think it would be?
I think if we put the tool here, we cannot predict what will happen with the tool. It's the first thing. So in China, people do not have such a tool like blogging tool years ago. However, from 2 years ago, there are blogging tools emerged, and many people just want to try this tool to express in different ways. Sometimes they will try to touch the red line. And the red line may be there set by the government, the propaganda officials. However, if people touch the red line, the propaganda officials may not have enough time to get one individual's voice to be alerted. You know, they cannot Google all the day to find such red line voices. So the memes can be there, can be stored in the web page, and then people will check, some other readers will check the meme, then generate their own ideas. Maybe they will also touch the red line, or maybe they will have a more rational or more comfortable words to express in another way. So the memes can be connected to form a fabric of voice that means that can get a big picture of this idea, the original post. So I think if it exists there, the officials or the government won't have enough resources to get it rid of from the web cyberspace. So I think many people are trying to touch the right line in their own way, in a tricky way, sometimes in a not very explicit just the implicit way to express their ideas out. Then other peoples will transform the memes into other kinds of expressions. So it's the tricky way that people use all the day. For the blogging hosting services, they have a very long list of keywords filtering system. For example, Jiang Zemin cannot be expressed in blog. All the name will be filtered out as the XXX when you publish your blog in your blog hosting service. However, people will use different tricky ways. For example, Jiang, space, then Zemin, and the filter system won't recognize such keywords, so people can also express. However, if the net police find such tricky ways, they will order the blogging service providers to close the individual's blog. Otherwise, they will close the whole service. It's also at risk right now, today. Yeah.
So let's let Ori get into the question. He's been waiting patiently here.
Yeah, I actually wanted to say two things. The two big themes that I see when you speak are, one, the language barrier, and two, the topic that we like to discuss is censorship here being in the United States. I just wanted to share one, a personal comment. We have a great interest in East Asia, especially media and culture, and the way that we've solved that language barrier is to find Chinese expats here in the United States who are bilingual and are willing to translate. And there's such a wealth of information that is in Chinese that simply isn't available in English. But now, to move from that theme to the censorship theme, one of the things that I realize, especially that China now being such a large population, will eclipse all these other markets. As we use these expats here in the United States to go into China and translate this information and vice versa, we have not discussed censorship in the reverse direction, China blocking outsiders from looking at information internally. Because right now there's all this information that's just totally out there that even the government publishes that they don't worry about because they know that the majority of foreigners who use either English as a second language or Americans using English can't access. Is there any discussion, sort of like what GeorgeWBush.com did to the rest of the world during the election where they blocked themselves from foreign intervention? Is there any discussion of this? Is there any...
And not just China, incidentally. I mean, this is an
right, exactly.
Iran, this is an interesting...
Because we talk about like internal censorship, but now when that market becomes larger, when the blogging world of China becomes larger than our blogging world, will our access be threatened?
You know, in China, there is a very big system in the internet infrastructure called Great Firewall. Most of them know that. The China government has invested a lot in this system, more than any other countries. Yeah, I think it has already invested about 1 million RMB to this Great Firewall system. So many of the Western websites cannot be accessed in China. However, you can use some websites can be accessed via proxy servers. We all know that. However, if your website is not about political content or political sensitive or political potentially political content, your website can be accessed and will not be put into the blacklist. Yeah, within China. For your website, I think you can try to harness the grassroots power that maybe you can try to know some Chinese bloggers first. They may be your friends of website, and then you can they can help you to translate your website, some content into Chinese. Maybe there are they can build up a mirror set in China internally, and then help your content to be exposed in this blogosphere. Yeah.
Hoda, do you want to talk at all about firewalling in Iran at this point, or sort of prohibitions as far as people getting on? We'll go to the next question. Let's go to Michael.
Hi. I'm a language teacher and a linguist and a blogger, and so I've been investigating some of these language issues. I think the good news is that in the long term, machine translation is going to make blogs or any internet content accessible in any language, but that's still probably 5 to 10 years away. A lot of really smart people are working on it, though, because obviously this is the Tower of Babel. English has emerged as the lingua franca, and in a way there's nothing wrong with that, but at the same time a lot of the most interesting and immediate writing is being done in other languages, obviously, and so we need to have a way to access it. It doesn't have to be an impermeable membrane. One thing that I've been advocating and trying to pilot is having American bloggers or English language bloggers pair up, bilingual ones, with a blogger whose stuff they find is interesting or topically related to their own stuff, and run a sidebar. Do a translation and run a sidebar. You know, every day pick one thing out of the other person's blog that you think would be interesting to your readers, and it would be reciprocal. So that person who's writing in a native language somewhere around the world. Because a lot of bloggers have connections and are bilingual, and that would be one way in the immediate future to try and work around this.
So just procedurally, one of the things we're going to be working on later today, the discussion immediately after lunch is going to talk specifically about tools and sort of actual tools that we might build to sort of help us along with that. As we get into the last session where our gurus in the corner are going to help us sort of try to figure out how to turn this idea into a movement, plans like that and thinking about how we sort of start organizing some of this may come up again and maybe a way that we want to go. We got a lot of people who want to get in questions. Charlie Nesson gets to go first because, well, he's smarter than most of us.
I've had a thought that has been bugging me for some time that I have felt maturing fast during the last 2 days in various different ways. The base thought is that for an internet center like the Berkman Center, it's limiting to think of what we do as just internet. In fact, internet is one communication media, but if it's possible to link the power of the internet with old media, traditional media, that in fact is very widely accessible and often very cheap, that you might magnify the power. So several things that have been cropping up as the last 2 days have gone on, and particularly some things that have come out right here, have brought an idea into focus much more than it had been before, and I would really love to ask for help and put it out as a form of question to everybody to add to the thought. So, for example, Hodor talks about the importance of finding a prominent blogger to somehow bring focus and give exposure to the blogging experience, and the importance of encouraging new bloggers when they come on in some way, and the importance of getting out information about the tools and the methodology and explaining how it works. And you, Isaac, talk about the business aspect of there being a potential to a blogging community of people who have some affluence and technical ability, and businessmen start thinking about that. And so the idea that I was talking about yesterday to start with Hodor, one of the things he said was that one of the reasons why blogging has been explosive in Iran is because it's available, whereas other media are constrained, except, he said, for satellite television that comes into Iran from some relatively low-grade producers in Los Angeles, not programming of any particular consequence. But the fact is there's a mass medium that is available to come into Iran. I was provoked a little bit along this line also by Omai News, which is talking about Omai TV. So the idea emerges of trying to use old media as a way of magnifying, clarifying, focusing, spurring on the generation of a blogosphere. So the thought comes up, suppose that we were somehow to sponsor an hour a week on satellite TV pointed towards Iran, in which someone like Hodor, who really doesn't need to find another famous person, you're a famous person in yourself, and in fact, media makes famous people. Suppose you were to host a program that took as its focus the blogosphere. I was talking to Pizer over here. He says, you have to have a hook. I'm realizing as I'm listening to this, blogging is the hook. Blogging is the community. It's the thing you would be talking about. It's the community you would be asking for contribution from by way of material that you feature. And so that's basically the thought. The thought is, could we take this to a new level? Ethan talks about, is this a movement? Would it be possible to take blogging to a new level in a given location where it's already got a base by hooking on to some relatively cheap, not totally costless, but relatively cheap mass medium and using the creativity of the blogosphere organized by some personage to actually make a program that would create a feedback loop so that you could put stuff up and the internet could be used as the way of getting response from the community and the medium could be the method of generating it back out. So that's basically the thought, and I would love to get other thoughts from others as it goes through the day and see if this is actually something that would be workable.
Well, so since we've just invented Hodor TV, it seems only appropriate to let Hodor have the first response to it.
Yeah, one of the things that I've been thinking during the past few days is that blogs are not our goals. They're all tools. They're the great tools that we've suddenly discovered that we could achieve our goals with it. So, and we cannot limit ourselves to blogs because they're just one of the things that we've discovered, and it was one of the early promises of the internet, but it didn't happen because of many technical reasons or business reasons and stuff like that. And now we've suddenly discovered it, and it doesn't mean that we have to do all our things through blogging. But it's so easy. It's such an easy tool for ordinary people to use and this is the fact that's happened, all our attention and all of our interest in this media, in this medium. But still, there are many, many ways that we could reach more people wider, because through radio, especially, I know your love about radio. I share the same thing. And for example, we could easily in Iran, for example, we could easily launch a radio that. Because the goal is to promote the freedom of speech, to reach people, to talk about political issues and important issues in any way that we can. So why don't we use radio and then start some sort of talk shows based on the content of these weblogs that we have, and then we use the content of weblogs and the form of radio and reach much, much more people.
Okay, yeah. So we've got about 10 more minutes before we have to break this session. I know a ton of people want to get in. We're lined up with Jay, Krista, then over in the corner. If we manage to keep going, we'll get Chris in there. Otherwise, we've got the whole afternoon to keep talking. I hope people are taking notes on this because we're starting to get tangible suggestions, and that's where we're really looking to come out with later in the day. So I hope someone who is not me is actually on top of this. But let's go over to Jay for the moment.
I just have one thing to share about Charles' question. I will start a new blogging format from next week in China. I will interview 30 typical bloggers in and record the audio and then put on my weblog, our Chinese blog portal called cmblog.org. You know, it's a non-profit organization already. And other than those Chinese bloggers, I will want to continue the interview to extend to some English bloggers, including Dan Gilmer, maybe Joe Ito, such as others. And I want to, I myself want to be the bridge to connect the two worlds. Yeah. So it's a thing to be shared. Yeah.
So let's go over to Jay.
Jay Rosen from NYU and Press Think. First, to respond to Charlie briefly, Chris Lydon is trying to create...
Is Chris here? Oh.
Well, he's trying to create a radio show based on blogging that it would be first world, but it would take in some of the energy that you're talking about. But he can tell you himself, says he's here, and he's a great self-promoter. So I'll leave it to him. This is not so much a question as an observation. If you look at the history of the political press in the world, one of the biggest factors in bringing about a powerful political press has been a dynamic that's essentially internal to the state. And that is when there's a dispute within the government, within the ruling class, there's a tendency when there's a loser in the dispute for the losing side to go public. This is how the political press first got its start, is when those who lost a battle in parliament, let's say, and couldn't win, decided to go outside of parliament and appeal to people were called out of doors. The people out of doors would be the people who weren't represented in parliament, to try and win in a second way because they lost inside. And in the 18th century, this is how the political press first became important, is that losers in disputes would leak. It happens today, every week in Washington. And so if blogs became the place where losers in a dispute inside the government could go outside the government and appeal to a larger public, then people in the political class would actually have an incentive to keep blogs open, because you never know when you're going to be the loser and you need to go outside the governing class. So this is just a suggestion to you. I'm sure it's happened with weblogs already around the world, but it's a dynamic that does not go away. And it doesn't matter if you have a free society or a controlled society. It doesn't matter if there's a public that includes everybody or it's just an elite public. There is still this pressure for losers in an intra-party dispute to find some other way of getting their point across. And if blogs could be the way that this happens, then they might find a foothold in the political system that would be very hard to take away. So that's my suggestion.
Good stuff, Shay. Let's let Krista get in.
I actually want to go back to something that to a question that Ori raised, which I think is very important. It's the question why, because I also believe that it is very closely connected to the answer about the language that was also a subject of discussion. I think it is very important to ask if you are undertaking or are thinking of undertaking blogs, as for example I am, is to ask the question: can the blogs do anything to further the mission of my particular project that I'm engaging in, and in what way? And that's, for example, why I'm here, and it is very interesting to listen to the conversation. But as, for example, Hoder mentioned and other people around here, blogs, I mean, there may be other medias or other ways to achieve what you want to do. It also comes back to the question of language, I think, as well. Because if you want to get the message of your NGO or of your organization out to the international world, of course, you do it in English. Now, if, on the other hand, if you want to get local NGOs to influence the policy in, let's say, Latvia, to get their issues on the agenda and to get their voices heard, I mean, you would do it in Latvian. There's no question about that. So, again, it is the question of why, what you want to achieve. You can't just assume that, you know, everything at some point will be in English or to even a greater extent that is now. And in that respect, I don't quite agree with Hoder about if it's not in English, it doesn't exist. it is the question of, you know, why does it have to be in English? And also, one last comment, if we're talking about blogs being bridges and bridges between, you know, communities or people or different opinions, if you really want to understand, or if you, as Americans, for it's just an example, want to know what the Chinese are talking about you in Chinese, there's always the option of learning the language.
Let's get over here, and then we're going to give Chris Lydon the last word.
Okay. A lot of the emphasis in social software is on this kind of kumbaya, good feeling, everybody gather around the campfire and build bridges. Let's feel good about each other. I think it's important to remember the large part of the sociology of group formation is antagonism, us and them. And I think that's really a lot of what drove the political blogosphere this year. The, you know, you had the left and the right throwing stones at each other, and that was good fun. That's what makes sports fun. It's a large part of who we are as creatures. And so, you know, vis-a-vis what would help the blogosphere grow in your environments, frankly, might be, you know, some antagonism, some punch-ups. So my question would be, you know, what evidence do you have of that dynamic right now within your separate blogospheres?
Let's get some antagonism from our panel here. Rory, do you want to go first on that one?
I guess that the us versus them is reflecting us as Kenyans, especially those who are in the diaspora who feel a need to sort of maintain our Kenyan-ness within the United States and not, or wherever we are. And so many times we're writing just for us. It's also, I do a lot of criticism of the current government, and a lot of other bloggers do the same thing. So it's antagonistic in that, you know, we're all Kenyan, but we also are, it's a space for us to challenge in ways that maybe, you know, I wouldn't ordinarily write a letter to the editor or, you know, be marching on the streets or whatever, but I'm expressing my opinion. And I think that's one, when Professor Nissen was talking about linking it up with traditional media or, you know, how to play it up, my only concern would be that blogging not turn into an elitist project, because part of the beauty of blogging is that it allows people to express. I wouldn't want someone to look at any one blog and think, boy, I could never do that, or I could never give that sort of commentary, because you lose out on different voices or people who ordinarily don't think that they're the type to write an editorial or they're the type to go on the national news and comment on something. And I think the way that you publicize it also has to be in a way that makes it seem that blogging is something that everyone can do, and you don't always have to have an agenda, and you know, you could be doing it about your poetry or whatever. That would be my concern. The Kenyan blogosphere has managed to sort of retain its diversity. People are writing on all sorts of things. And I guess the us versus them is just that it's a space for us to retain our Kenyan-ness and not, while we're still living in America or wherever we are. And it's also, there's a young versus old, you know, we're the new school versus the old school kind of thing. We're different, we're energetic, we're progressive, we do all sorts of different things. We write poetry, we, you know, do literature, we are political, we're in law school, we're, you know, so...
Chris Lydon, you're the bulwark between us and lunch.
Yeah, I was going to say, I will not stand between anybody and the lunch tray. But I just wanted to say very briefly, I would love to be have a shot in the afternoon, but I wanted to thank Charlie for what I've always called the Nessun feedback loop. This is one of those many Nessun ideas that a year later are all true. But the point was simply that in a radio signal going outward and a... which has a kind of peculiar penetration, it's inexpensive, it's worldwide, and the web as the feedback loop, which has kind of infinite carrying capacity for detail, for variety, for access, you know, it's all over the place, and it's all counts. It's a perfect system. I mean, these two media were meant to be married. I think radio even more than television, but And radio also adds what most blogs to this point don't have, which is the power of the human voice, not to be underestimated. And furthermore, a kind of the sort of talk show you were speaking about has the value of threading the pearls, so to speak, of the blogs, making a sort of, not exactly order out of them, but a kind of connection and a continuity and a community out of them. So I think it's exactly what we're working on. We're very close to getting it done. I'd love to tell people more what the goal is. I'd love to enlist your help.
So, Chris, we'll give you a bit more time on that after lunch. A couple of quick things. For people who are interested in how blogs and the power of human voice are coming together, one option during lunchtime is to go sit down with Dave Weiner, who's going to be talking a bit about podcasting, which is a new emerging idea to essentially marry weblogging along with audio. And it's happening very, very quickly. It's very exciting. After lunch, we're going to get significantly more concrete. And in fact, coming after lunch, we're going to start off with a show and tell. You've got an assignment. If anyone would like to participate in this show and tell, you're welcome to come and take 2 minutes with a keyboard and show off a tool that you're in love with. And I'll just tell you, just to give you the sense of it, I'm going to start by showing off Delicious. We're going to end up showing off the Arabic blogging tool coming from the Spirit for America people. But this could be translation. This could be aggregation. These can be any sorts of tools that you think would be really useful for this audience. That's going to lead us into a brainstorm about other tools we might need. And that, in turn, is going to lead us into a brainstorm about where we might be going with this as a movement. So that's the roadmap for the rest of the day. Let's get back here 15 minutes after 1:15. Thanks, everybody, for your time this morning. Thank you.